Jules, the company's on lockdown, but we are back. We've received special permission to come back here in the building.
It's just like, it looks like we own the building. You know, it's ours. You can do whatever you
There want. Is definitely something post-apocalyptic about it, but everybody's working hard from home. This is it. I mean, football is right there on the corner. I am psyched. I'm hyped. I'm amped. We're going to talk a little bit of Bayern, the semifinals. We've got the alphabet 11, the letter X, which is a bit of a challenge.
You yeah, for sure.
Let me guess, you brushed up on your knowledge of the Chinese Super League, didn't you?
I try not to go too much into the Chinese Super League, but inevitably we all had to at least get one, two, maybe three players. Some got the whole 11. From the Chinese to
nothing
Chinese
wrong with
league,
that.
So, yeah.
We're going to talk about today is the day that the Premier League should tick all the boxes. We'll talk a little bit about that. And we've got Sid Lowe.
La
Liga is back. Betis and Sevilla this evening as we tape Thursday morning. So let's get this baby on the road.
Let's go.
All right. So let's get the Premier League out of the way. It's happening. The medical protocol is not approved, but agreed.
Yeah.
So we're there on that. Good news on the neutral grounds front. The Liverpool derby will be played at Goodison Park, which I guess is good.
It's good. Very good. The home games will be played at Anfield as well, which again is very good. I think as we've been saying and advocating for is common sense, and you can trust fans, and let's hope that they don't disappoint us and let us down, not just us, but everybody down. But I think, yeah, it was a really good decision. They took their time, but eventually they made it.
It does look as if certain grounds are still waiting on some of the logistical movements, zone A, zone B, or I guess they're using colors like everybody else.
Yeah, red,
right? red, green, or whatever. But no, we're just about there. Of course, reminder, season kicking off with, Manchester City and Arsenal and Aston Villa and Sheffield United on the 17th, which is seven days away.
And also, for us, you know, journalists, we will find out very soon how many journalists from written press are allowed in the stadium. You saw in Germany yesterday that they increased, I think it started with 13, and now they will be allowing 26 journalists to be in the press box, social distancing and everything. It will be the same for non-TV right holders, for right holders. So we will know a bit more technically what it means for us covering games. Who can go and how many can go and how you do interviews and stuff like that.
I think initially the Premier League says it's 20, right?
Yes, something like that. Yeah. So
that's obviously a space to watch.
Yeah.
Serie A also back with the...
When? Tell me when at what time? I don't know. I'm checking. I'm looking on official, mediums, and I can't find any date for sure, any times.
Information's on a need-to-know basis. But no, the... the indications that we have is that it's going to be on Friday and Saturday. Juventus hosting Milan. Reminder, the first leg finished 1-1.
Yeah.
And Napoli hosting Inter. And in the first leg, Napoli actually won 1-0. So there's high hopes there. You still have this issue in Italy, obviously, of the... if a player tests positive, the entire team has to go into quarantine. They hope they're going to be able to resolve that soon. And the other thing that they reached an agreement on is, even though the league voted against it, is that they will use Plan B. They will use the playoffs if there's time to do the playoffs, and if there's no time, this is if you have to step down again.
Yeah.
Plan C remains
the algorithm.
And there's a lot of talk. I just want to get a sense from you, because people don't always understand this. The fact that there's a federation and there's a league. And the league, in some cases, is just a league of the top flight, as is the case here in England with the Premier League. Elsewhere, it encompasses the first two divisions. I think in France, it's the top two divisions.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But there's always this debate about should they have more autonomy, because Serie A clubs, I think, really in their self-interest, were arguing, no, we get to decide how we finish the season. And, you know, they said, unless a team is mathematically relegated when we step down again, they shouldn't be relegated, which is obvious. Turkey's not voting for Christmas, right? stuff. But What's the setup in France? And has there been calls for more autonomy from the federation?
It's certainly the debate that we're having right now, because as you would recall, it's the federation who decided to stop the season. They have the power over the leagues. They currently deals with the national team and organizes everything with the national team. The French Cup, not the League Cup, but the French Cup. And as you said, anything from grassroots to the third division, not the top two divisions, which is the league. And a lot of clubs are saying, hang on, we should not be under the power of the French Federation, because if you look at it, Noël Le Graët, who is the head of the French FA, has played the blinder, because in September, he will organize three France games, which means that probably with fans as well. So the money will come in the Federation. They won't lose on anything. He will have the French Cup final at the end of July, probably with some fans as well. So again, in terms of impact that the French Federation could have had, there's just nothing compared to the league, who have lost a lot of money, who have lost a lot of credibility as well. And there's a lot of people in France saying, like, this is not right. We cannot have the head of the French FA ruling and running or deciding what can happen to the French top flight and the French second division, when those leagues, you know, well, represent far more than the national team, even on the French Cup, what French football is about.
You can also make the argument, and people in the US are be like, aren't going to get this, because, except for, well, I suppose in football you have it a little bit with the USSF yeah. and MLS, although they're very, very tightly interwoven. But elsewhere you've got leagues, you know, when you got the NBA, which is a commissioner, and the NFL is a commissioner.
Yeah.
If there is a federation, it's something totally, totally different, which is essentially powerless. I get the point that these guys generate most of the money, but equally, federation's job is not to be a for-profit entity. True. It is to look after all of football. When you start messing with saying, oh, well, let's limit relegation, let's not have promotion relegation if this happens and whatever, I think it's right that they step in. And I remind people, especially people in Italy who are saying that, like, oh, this should be more like the Premier League, that here in England, in the Premier League, remember when they had the whole neutral games thing and they said there was a suggestion of a compromise solution where, well, if we have to play neutral games, then we can't have relegation.
Yeah.
You remember,
the
FA who stepped in and says, we're going to veto this, if you even think about it, because you have to have promotion and relegation, you know, in whatever format, with whatever.
Playoffs or anything.
It is the pyramid, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that is part and parcel of what European football is and the way things are set up. Anyway, enough of that. Shall we bring on Dr. Sid Lowe?
Dr. Sid.
Bookshelf?
Yeah.
And here he is.
Here he
as
is.
As promised, ready to talk some Liga since we're playing tonight. But let's start off the top to, you and I will be sharing our views on Juan Malillo later in the show. But he's joining Pep Guardiola at Manchester City. He used to be Pep Guardiola's boss. Sid, can you just give us a capsule review about why a certain type of football hipster gets so excited whenever you mention the words Juanma and Leo back to back?
You see, you've done something really difficult there, Gab. You've asked me to encapsulate in brief Juanma Leo. When if you ever talk to Juanma Leo, the first thing that hits you is that this isn't brief. This is contextualized. It's nuanced. There's all sorts of different elements to it. So to try and if you like, reduce Juanma Leo to one thing would possibly be the one thing that would annoy Juanma Leo more than anything else. This is a man who didn't make it as a professional footballer, although he was very, very good at football Salah, who became the youngest manager in the Spanish first division at 29 when he took Salamanca up, who has a very clear but at the same time very nuanced view of how football should be played, is deeply committed to the idea of a positional game, would very much see himself a Cruyffist. He is, I suppose, if you like, Pep Guardiola's even more philosophical and even more theory-driven uncle or brother. That's what he is.
Now, I'm curious. I mean, I'm not expecting you to project the future, but obviously when we talk about Pep, he has certainly evolved over time. He's always tinkering and tweaking. If you go back and you see his first Barcelona teams, they don't look anything like, or not. There are certain concepts that underpin it and whatever, but there are stark differences between those and his late Barcelona teams and indeed his Bayern teams and his City teams. I'm just curious, and why would is this a dynamic where Pep wants somebody in there who can challenge him perhaps a little, who can, you know, rather than taking on an apprentice, he's gone for a master, even as he has evolved? Or is Pep trying to get closer back to his roots or where he was before? Is there a way for you to speculate wildly, as the media like to do, on what's behind this?
I mean, look, I think the first thing, I suppose, because I guess it's implicit in your question, is I think it would be a mistake to assume that because Juan Malillo is committed to positional game, committed to a very thoughtful game, because he talks about interchange of positions, because he talks about, if you like, those kind of mechanics that would make you look at him and say that he's the purest of the Guardiolistas. I think it would be a mistake to think that he doesn't evolve himself. I think it would be a mistake to think he doesn't think about and tinker and shift and alter the way that he plays. He's someone who's very interested, for example, in the evolution of football. And I've had conversations with him before where he said things like, oh, I found a video of Liverpool in the 70s and I'm watching some of the things that they do, which were done then and then kind of fell out of fashion in football and I think can be recoverable. So, and you know, then watching how that can then maybe apply later on or which parts of it can't apply later on and so on. So I don't think he's stuck in his view of it. In terms of how the dynamic will work with Guardiola, you know, this is someone that curiously has been both, if you like, Guardiola's boss and was on course to be Guardiola's employee, I suppose. You know, this is the guy that was Guardiola's manager when Guardiola went to play in Mexico. But when Guardiola stood potentially as sporting director in the presidential elections in 2003 at Barcelona with Lluís Passat as a potential president, Leo was going to be his manager. So in that scenario, of course, Guardiola would have been his boss in theory. And so I don't think you necessarily need to look at it as someone that Guardiola is maybe coming back to his roots or trying to shift his style or trying to go in a particular direction, so much as this is someone that Guardiola believes in, someone who Guardiola thinks is hugely talented, has a huge amount to offer. And yes, by the way, someone who will challenge him, someone who will say, well, hang on, let's think about it and do it this way. Let's do it differently. When Guardiola first started as Barcelona manager, both at Barcelona B and indeed in the first team, although it was unofficial, Leo was part of that process of building training sessions, building ideas, creating the mechanisms that allow players to take on board these ideas without necessarily just saying to them, right, you do this, you do that. Rather by building a context, and again, I apologize for this because it goes off on one, but this is kind of the way that Leo would see it, building a context in which players understand how to interpret moments of the games. So I think what, in terms of what has Guardiola gone for here, he's gone for someone he believes in. I think that's the bottom line, and someone who absolutely trusts.
Sid, La Liga is back tonight with the Sevilla derby. We imagine how excited you could be, and what a great game as well, even behind closed doors to resume the league with. We said, I think last week or the week before when you were on, that there was a lot at stake and a lot to play for the title, for the Champions League places, for relegation, Europa League, etc., etc. Let's start with the game tonight. I mean, contrasted season between Betis and Sevilla, but still a fantastic derby always, even behind closed doors.
Yeah, and that's the reason why they're coming back with this one, because of course they could have come back with any of the games from this round of games, and there are other good matches. There's a Valencian derby, for example. You've got Atletico and Athletic, but there was a sense that they wanted to come back with a game that would feel like a celebration of the return of football. Now, obviously, that comes with an implicit risk, which is that if you come back with a game that's so defined by the fans, and there are no fans, it might diminish some of that impact, but there's no doubt this is a huge game. In terms of the two teams, yeah, contrasting seasons, possibly not as far away from each other as they might have thought they would be, certainly in the first 2 or 3 months of the season when Sevilla started brilliantly and we started to wonder if whether this was maybe even a team that could push, probably not compete for the title, but push Madrid and Barcelona. And then at that point, of course, Betis were in big trouble at the bottom. The manager, Rubi, has been saved a couple of times from late goals. Remember a particular one, I think it was back in September or very early October with a last-minute goal and everyone goes absolutely wild. So they are different teams. Some similarities in approach in that they're both teams that try and attack, albeit in slightly different ways. Sevilla a bit more orthodox, perhaps Betis are a little bit more mobile. But it's a really fascinating game. And I must admit, I'm excited about it in footballing terms. I'm also excited about it in terms of how will we feel, you know, how this whole thing will feel and what a game like this will feel like when it's lost the thing that makes it this game, you know, and how could this game be, if you like, on its own terms?
Sid, what we're hearing is that, and I think this is the headline Tebas spoke this morning, you were part of the press conference. There seems to be in Spain, and obviously Spain is one of the countries that got hit hardest, certainly along with Italy and England. There seems to be a willingness now to get fans back in already. We've touched upon this before in the Canary Islands, in Las Palmas, they're already in a position where they can play and sing in front of 10,000 supporters because of the situation there with the virus. Am I right in thinking today he said that he wants to bring back a portion of fans even before the end of the season?
Yeah, what he said was that he's open to the idea that, of course, this is something that has to be run through the health authorities. And as you rightly point out, this is an issue that we hadn't even thought about, insofar as everybody had just assumed, right, this season gets finished without fans, and next season we start to talk about it, and maybe next season we get 30% in the stadiums, and it builds from there. This was provoked by Las Palmas saying, well, hang on, we're in a phase of the de-escalation of lockdown now that means, in theory at least, big events can go ahead. So we're going to ask for it. And because we can ask for it of the local authorities, we can do it this effectively without going through La Liga and without going through the central state, without going through the Consejo Superior de Deportes or the Ministry of Health at national level. Then that provoked a reaction from the CSD that said, hang on, it's going to be all or everyone or no one. You know, we can't have the unfair scenario in which some teams can have fans and others can't. But Tebas himself said, well, actually, no, I don't see why we can't have some fans in if that's possible. He said today that he thinks it would represent a success and it would represent some progress if by the end of this season there are some games with maybe 10 or 15%. I think those are the two figures he mentioned, 10 or 15% perhaps in the stadium. I think as much as anything else, obviously, look, fundamentally, we would love to have fans back. I think as much as anything else, it's symbolic of that return towards normality. And in part, that's what this La Liga return is about. You know, it's about saying this is another step for all of us. It's not just La Liga returning. It's another sign that things are getting back to something closer to normality. I think, given what he said, I think given that things have moved very quickly in the last two or three weeks and things that we thought weren't plausible not so long ago now are, I would now be surprised if we didn't get at least some games with some fans in. I think the numbers will be very, very reduced, but I think we probably will see some now before the end of the season.
There will be no fans this weekend, but we will all be in front of the television and we'll probably be able to see Eden Hazard being back for Real Madrid, Luis Suarez being back for Barcelona. Leo Messi seems to have trained normally now today and should be able to play at Mallorca. It would feel strange as well to see those guys back when we thought we would never see them again this season.
I'll tell you what, I'll go a step further, Jules, and say genuinely when he got injured earlier in the season, when we knew it was an injury for almost the entire season, I thought I wouldn't see Luis Suarez play for Barcelona again. Given that at that stage they were talking about, you know, replacements in the summer, that Luis was of a certain age, that he had these knee problems, and I thought, I did think there's a chance that this is the end. He's back and he's fit and he's ready to play this season, which of course we didn't anticipate. I mean, the season should have finished, what was it, 3 weeks ago now, I think it is. And then in the case of Hazard, you know, I suppose it's different with Hazard because, you know, we thought he probably would play again this season, but we didn't know exactly when, at what point he would come back, how fit he would be. And of course, off the back of a first season at Real Madrid, which has been quite disappointing. Now, he's had a couple of big injuries. He's not played a huge amount. He hasn't always looked fully fit. He said himself that when he first arrived, he was slightly overweight. And we've had little glimpses of him and we thought, wow, here's a player. But it's only ever been little glimpses. And of course, you know, those people who watch him in the Premier League, which is a lot of people, not just amongst us, but a lot of people in Spain, they know he's a great player, but they hadn't had the chance to see it yet. And there were starting to be some doubts about whether or not it could fit within the Madrid team. And now this is really exciting. Obviously, we don't know until we see this in games, but Madrid themselves as a club, and you know, this may well be a kind of a, if you like, a deliberate message or a deliberate filtering of information. There has been a lot of suggestion in the last week that, ooh, he looks really good in these training games. Now, let's see him in real games. But I think there has been a lot of the optimism around Real Madrid has, yeah, without doubt, been hung on the return of Eden Hazard.
Sid, I'm not going to ask you about the title race because you get asked this every single time you're in front of the microphone.
You've given it to us before.
I think I broadly.
I don't know what I said, but whatever I said, it was nonsense.
It's a long sit on the fence thing. So it's a tough call, and maybe you should put it on your head eventually. So I'm going to ask you about the Champions League race because I think this is exciting because you've got four teams in the space, you know, competing for those final two spots. And you have a situation where you've got four very different teams, obviously, with Getafe and Atletico Madrid and Real Sociedad and Sevilla, of course. So can you tell me a little bit how you think the dynamic's going to play out among those four teams, not just who's better, but also who might thrive in these conditions?
Yeah, it's a really, really...
Oh, sorry, and can we broadly separate them between grinders, i.e. Getafe and Atletico Madrid, and
footballistas and ballers.
Yes, grinders and ballers, or is that unfair?
No, I don't think it is entirely unfair, and I think you're right that part of what makes them interesting are that they are teams with very, very different identities. You know, I mean, Getafe have often seen as being, of having certain similarities to Atletico Madrid. I must say, I think at times that's partly exaggerated, but of course there are some parallels to the extent that Pepe Bordalás has been talked about as, you know, if you are ever going to have to look for a post-Simeone future, someone like Bordalás would be perfect at Atletico Madrid. Then you take Real Sociedad, who are a very quick, very dynamic, but also very technical team in which the ability to bring the ball out, to be very direct, but very direct along the floor. You know, they're a counter-attacking team, but that doesn't mean long ball. That means a sudden wave from the back of three or four players springing out, really, really nice technically, and a very young and very kind of exuberant, exciting team. Then you've got Sevilla, which I suppose you could almost say halfway between the two. They are, again, athletic and dynamic. They're quite attacking, but conservative at moments when they feel, I think, under pressure. And it's going to be very interesting to see how they respond to this. Now, there's all sorts of discussions in this, and you know, you two have been following much more closely than me what's happening in Germany, and whether we're starting to get some tentative answers there. But for example, does it benefit you in a 11-week season compressed into 4.5 weeks, having been off for 3 months, does it benefit you to be a very young side, a very dynamic side, in which case Real Sociedad definitely have the advantage? Does it benefit you to be a physically aggressive side, in which case it's Getafe? How important is it to be able to compress the game, which is what Getafe do? The statistics show that the gap between the back four and the front two at Getafe is tighter than in any other team in La Liga. You know, they make the pitch smaller than anyone else. You know, does it help to have a big bench? And we've discussed this before, in which case, you know, in terms of squad depth, it's definitely Atletico. Sevilla have a lot of players, but I think a lot of players that the manager doesn't entirely trust in. So I think in terms of how they respond to this, it's really difficult to judge. And then the other question, I suppose, and at the risk of going for the flippant joke as my answer here, the other question is, how do they respond playing without fans? And here comes a flippant joke. Getafe do it anyway. And so therefore they'll be absolutely fine. Now, I say that's entirely unfair. And I say this to someone who's very fond of Getafe and actually whose Getafe's fans have really responded this year. And the Coliseum has been great. But we're still talking about a stadium of 13, 14,000 as opposed to stadiums of 40 plus, you know? And so I honestly don't know the answer to who is better placed. But in terms of the quality of their football and that sense I have that they should be able to just kind of play and enjoy it on its own terms, you know, in terms of enjoying the game itself, I kind of feel like Real Sociedad are the best team, best place to keep doing that.
I'm on board with that.
I was going to ask you two your top six, but...
Yeah, that was... No. Let's talk about something more important, because in the battle of the leagues... it's Bundesliga.
I don't think Sid wants to hear that.
It's Bundesliga against La Liga, Sid. It's you against me. And basically, because Jules is playing Brazil, whoever wins this game effectively between us is going to win the group. Yes? You agree with that?
I think it does look that way, doesn't it? it's not a situation that we expected to be in, because I'm going to be honest here. I think Bundesliga and La Liga between us, and it may well just be me and Gab's bullishness, I think we probably thought we would beat up on the other two teams.
Yeah.
I certainly did.
And certainly when Jules turned up in that ludicrous cap and the glasses, we basically knew it was done for Ligue 1. But it turns out that Liga, I was actually quite lucky to get away with a draw against Liga, which I'm deeply depressed by, the fact that I got away with a draw. But it doesn't matter, because what matters most is that Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez looked absolutely wonderful in that Oviedo kit.
Sid, thanks so much.
My pleasure. See you later, gents.
Thanks, man.
Bye. Jules, Sid was great. Here's something even better. It's quick hits.
Let's go, Gab.
Sheffield United say they're still hopeful that Dean Henderson will get to finish the season with them rather than going back to Manchester United. Jules, is it weird to you that this deal hasn't yet been sorted out? And I mention this as an example of all the other loan deals that expire on June 30th.
And it's not just this one. It's many others from the people I speak to. This is just not has been addressed. I find it incredible that it will start next week in the case of Dean Henderson and Sheffield United, or I don't know, Danny Ceballos and Arsenal, for example. And yet you're not sure exactly, you know, like how long more they would be able to play for you after June the 30th. And you're like, well, surely Dean Henderson is your best player if you're Sheffield United. So I'm hoping that maybe we don't know. And Sheffield United and Manchester United have had talks and they've discussed it already. And hopefully for them, they're nearing some sort of agreement. But how can you let that to the last minute?
I'm not clear on what there is to talk about. I mean, unless you're nickel and diming over 2 months of loan fees. Personally, and some people disagree with this, I would have no problem if Manchester United told them, no, we're gonna take Dean Henderson back on June 30th, because we are our direct competitors to finish.
I know, but that's not fair. That's not fair.
I think they're entitled to do that. I don't.
No, they're entitled technically, but it's unfair, right?
Why?
Because he signed a contract for the whole season.
He signed a contract through June 30th.
Yeah, the whole season. The whole season.
Through June 30th.
Yeah, that's the whole season. But except that when the whole season, for an incredible reason, is delayed a little bit, you know, technically, you'd have to play after June the 30th, but also technically, the whole season hasn't been played yet.
No, I take on board what you're saying. I mean, but I just wonder if the stakes get so high that it does come down to Manchester United and Sheffield United for that final spot, you know, and then Dean Henderson saves a penalty or something.
Yeah, of course.
United out of Europe. I mean, it would just be such an extraordinary tale, and it would be different from other loan situations because it would be United, you know,
yeah,
giving him permission for those
2 months. I mean, I've got more issues with that than with someone, for example, like Ryan Fraser, who is out of contract at Bournemouth on June the 30th, who is not going to stay, who maybe think, do you know what? I'm not going to risk getting an injury or anything.
I have no problem with that whatsoever.
If I play on. I don't have any problem
with that. Same issue, William and Pedro stretching it out at Chelsea. Or the guy at West Ham, the right back, the kid is really good, Ngakia. I mean, you know, why should he go and risk injury to play another 2 months?
I'm with you on that. I've got more issues with something like Dean Henderson and two clubs who don't find an agreement or don't really want to hear each other out on something like that.
But here's where I have a problem with it, and I think this is something that they need to consider, is what happens to those guys who are on loan, but you don't want them, right?
You'd be happy.
So I think you either make a rule for everybody and say all
but that
loans,
can't happen, right?
Right, all loans, and that, which means Inter get to keep Alexis Sanchez around, or you go the other way and you say, guys, if you want to recall your guy, you're free to do so, and then I'd have no problem with what Manchester United are doing.
And also, do you know what I find quite fascinating is Lucas Tuzar, for example, who in January was sold from Lyon to Hertha Berlin. Mm-hmm. And went back on loan to Lyon for the remaining of the season. Obviously, this whole pandemic happens. Now, Lyon are still in the Champions League, but in August. By then, the Bundesliga would have finished on June the 30th, and now Hertha are saying, hang on, sorry, but we need it back, so he won't be able to play the Champions League with him. So, one, you had that agreement with Lyon, and that you sort of come back on it,
right?
Because you were able to sort out your league before June the 30th, but also you are preventing him from playing in the Champions League, maybe, who knows, maybe winning the Champions League. I don't think it will happen, but you just don't know. And I think that's a bit harsh on him as well from Hertha.
It is. And you know, this is a big issue. We highlighted a long time ago, and I think clubs are just now reaching. In any case, by June 23rd, they need to have sorted out the contract extensions in the Premier League.
Well, talking about Premier League clubs, Gab, are going to make £1 billion in losses due to the coronavirus, according to a Deloitte study. But is it really that bad, Gab? And you hate those, right? You hate those numbers.
I absolutely hate these numbers, because this is what happens. And I'm not having a go at the people at Deloitte, right? The people at Deloitte who are, you know, good at their job, they go and they write a whole detailed 200-page summary or whatever it is. And then they put out a press release. And then along the way, somebody, usually an editor, or maybe their own PR guys, is like, ooh, let's put this in the headline and say they're going to lose £1 billion, right? And everybody runs with it. Oh my God, £1 billion, a billion. That's not what Deloitte are saying. No. If you actually, you just need to read the freaking story, right? They're going to lose 500 million this season, right? This season, meaning the season ends June 30th. They're going to lose that because part of it is the prorated rebate. Part of it is, all the reasons that we know. But they're going to make those 500 million, they're going to make another 500 million back next season. Right, they're saying that the 500 million they would have made this season, they will make back next season as well. As in, but they mean next season, meaning after June 30th, which stands to reason because that's when football starts up again. So it's basically, effectively, they're saying that unless knock on wood, but unless football stops altogether, they're going to lose 500 million, which is a ton of money, but it's not a billion. And I think we in the media need to do a better job at asking questions, even if numbers can be scary sometimes, and actually sorting out what does this really mean. 500 million, 20 clubs, 25 million per clubs, that is a hit. That is a big hit. But, for a club like Manchester United or Manchester City, you're talking about, and it's not going to be prorated because the bigger clubs are going to lose more, but, you are talking probably in the order of around 10%.
Yeah.
And that is the actual damage across the board. Now, Bayern Munich overcome Eintracht Frankfurt 2-1 to reach the German Cup final, or the Pokal, as they like to call it.
Yeah.
Where they're going to face Bayer Leverkusen, who beats Saarbrücken 3-0. But Jules, it was tough going for Bayern, wasn't it?
Yeah, it
got
was.
A little bit tasty in the second half. Huh?
I mean, they took the lead very early with Perisic's header, another assist by your friend Thomas Müller as well. Lovely assist too. Great little cross. And then it looked like they were controlling the game and they sort of fell asleep a little bit, I thought, and Flick made a few changes. And then eventually Frankfurt, who in credit to them, never really gave up. I don't think they were fantastic.
Well, they put on Bastos. I was like, here it is. Yeah. Here it is. The big man.
The big man. I mean, Da Costa scored a lovely goal, although the defending from Bayern was a bit poor. But yeah, and then as soon as Frankfurt leveled the score, then they put the intensity back Bayern, and then Lewandowski scored. But it was interesting to see Alphonso Davies, who went back to his normal position, if you want, when Lucas Hernandez came on and went as a winger, either on the right or on the left. And he ended up setting up the goal for Lewandowski. But yeah, I think it's too easy for them.
Davies, if he keeps playing for a top team that's going to have 80% possession, I would rather see him play at the back where he's got more space to run into, more space in which to accelerate. Because if you've got the ball and you're playing in the final third all the time, your quickness, obviously, is still going to be super quick.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily going to be as effective as it would be otherwise. You think Peter Bosz learned his lesson in the final? Do we give him any hope?
No. Yeah. It's just too easy for that. I think it's too easy for Bayern, unless they'll be complacent.
Peter, prove us wrong.
Come on, Peter. And it would be the first title in 27 years or something for Bayern. So it would be great if they could put this one out. I just don't think so. Manchester City's hearing at the Court of Arbitration for Sport, Gab, is over. And they kindly told us when we would get a verdict. Sometimes the first 2 weeks of July?
Yep. They put it in the press release, which they don't always do that. We finally find out who the judges were, because remember, it was super secret. We've talked about this before. It's a 2-year ban and a 30 million euro fine. I estimate it could cost Manchester City, close to $300 million over those 2 years. Obviously, questions about retaining players. It would be a huge blow. Manchester City say they have irrefutable evidence. It's over. It's done with. These three men are meeting on Zoom
now
and debating the issue, and we'll find out. But it's obviously going to have a massive impact one way or the other. Now, the Premier League reportedly have plans to print a Black Lives Matter message on players' jerseys. The Daily Mail reporting this. Is this a good idea, Jules?
Yeah, it's interesting because yesterday there was a captain meeting where the captains of Premier League clubs addressed this subject. Hector Bellerin was very vocal about it, like he's been at Arsenal as well internally. Troy Deeney as well, and trying to do something when the games resume next week, whether it's the two games on the Wednesday or all the games at the weekends. And I think he's right. I think this is a matter, as we've said before already, that means a lot, I think, to football players, means a lot, should mean a lot to everybody in the world, but to football players as well. And they want to make their voice heard. They want to transmit their message. And I think that's what they're going to do. We saw yesterday Arsenal playing Brentford at the Emirates in a friendly behind closed doors. And the players led by Hector Bellerin asked the club to produce t-shirts with messages, but messages sent by the player. So it was not the club saying, okay, we're going to do t-shirts for everyone.
So individual t-shirts. Messages.
Yeah, individual
messages. So Kratic's message might have been different from Aubameyang.
Yeah, for example, if Alexandre Lacazette had wanted Gab, I love you on his t-shirt, he could have had that. Right. I mean, not unfortunately really for you, he didn't. No, but,
message, but
he
yeah.
chose Black Lives Matter. Others chose I Can't Breathe. Others chose I'm Not Black But I Stand With You, which was Hector Bellerin's t-shirt. You know, you could have had anything yeah. you wanted that meant yeah. a lot to you and that you wanted to express to the whole world. And I think that was very positive. They took a knee as well before the game. And I think we need more of those to keep, you know, the message going and the whole movement going.
I agree that obviously this is something that, you know, given the circumstances and given the way that this movement's captured everybody, it's important that players be free to express themselves. I like the idea of having an individual message. I hate the idea of printing this on the shirt or making this into an institutional message.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it becomes like when they did it with a poppy, you know, here in England to commemorate the war.
No, which, and Frankfurt did it yesterday. They had Black Lives Matter on their shirt during the game. All of them, same shirt.
It becomes a corporate message. Let's not forget that the people who, which is fine. I mean, the corporations.
Yeah, it's better than no message, right? That's what we were saying on Monday. Well,
it's better than no message, but when you're making every player wear the shirt, you're showing the player with that message. And the player might have his own individual message. And
yeah.
it's important that I think people not feel compelled to do this. And the same thing with the poppies. If you don't have strong feelings about wearing
completely.
The poppy, but your shirt, your club gives you, here's your shirt, and there's a poppy on it, then you go along with it, right? And you, without really thinking about it. I think in some ways it cheapens it. Like, it's right that corporations and leagues and have a message, but I think it should be left to the players to decide how they want to interpret
it. Exactly. And that's why I liked what Arsenal did. And I think they deserve a lot of credit. And you know how much I like what they do, obviously, but I think they deserve a lot of credit for the way they did it. Well, I love this one, Gab. Media in Italy are reporting of showdown talks between Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Ivan Gazidis. Is there much to discuss then? Did he really get as heated as some of Italian media's made it?
Gee, I wonder where this story comes from. but there's not much to discuss. The dude, I think Italian media need to get off, Milan, to get off this obsession of, oh my God, what do we do without Ibra? We need Ibra. Ibra was great. He gave you a lift. When he comes back, he's injured right now. When he comes back, maybe he'll give you a lift as well. But the decision to decide whether, or the decision about whether to keep or let Ibra go is not a decision to make now. You do it at the end of the season where you find out if you're playing in the Europa League, where you can find out what your numbers are, when you can take stock of what the situation is. Gazidis is entirely right in not being bullied on this. Stop saying there's no project, there's no plan. No, there is a plan. You may disagree with it. It'll come to fruition when it comes out. And, you know, frankly, I think certain people are kind of milking this. There's nothing to say to Ibra. You have a contract. You're injured.
No, but
you come
on the
back,
other hand,
you
if,
play.
If also, as it was reported, Ibra...
Well, he's got offers from everywhere
around the world. No, but Ibra told Gazidis that he was too absent during this crisis, that basically he didn't do his job properly. This interests me more because if Ibra comes out and says to Gazidis, you know, you're not doing your job well or something like that, and you, whether you agree or not, I don't know. I mean,
look, it's fine for Ibra to have a position on whether Gazidis has been too absent or too present. Gazidis is the club's chief executive. He will ultimately be judged on whether they hit their targets and whether they sell it for a project. Equally, you had two dudes who represent the club on the sporting side, named Zvonimir Boban, who was there most of the season, and Paolo Maldini. Those are the guys who are supposed to be present.
Yeah.
You're going to have Ivan hanging around as a third wheel, you know, watching training instead of going and negotiating all those sponsorship deals and all that other stuff that he's supposed to be doing. I don't know if that's the best use of his time. It's great. Ibra has a position. Fine. But Gazidis will be judged on the targets he hits and the decisions he makes. I don't think he's going to be judged on how present he is mediating between players at the training ground. He's not the director of football.
True.
Major League Soccer is coming back.
Woohoo!
Jules. Tell me more.
Yes, Gab. They've announced yesterday that, which we knew, we kind of knew, but there would be a tournament in Orlando, same place as the NBA, but obviously another site. So, you know, in ESPN's house, really, pretty much, with all 26 teams, where you play a tournament. The results of that tournament, so if you win it, then that means you will have a place in the CONCACAF Champions League next season, which I think is great, and it's a good incentive. Also, your result in that tournament would then be taken into when the normal season resumes, if you want, after the tournament, and when things are a bit easier everywhere in the country. So I think it's great. I'm looking forward to it.
You know what I want to see? I'm going to give this idea for free to our bosses in Bristol, but the NBA is going to be there too, yeah, it looks yeah. over, right? So we know there's a lot of NBA players who are football fans.
Of course, yeah.
And some of them play football.
Yeah.
And we know that there's a bunch of MLS guys who can handle the rock and maybe play a little bit of hoops as well.
Yeah.
Could we imagine some kind of crossover? These guys are going to be so bored, right? They're not allowed to leave. They're staying in luxury hotels. I think I read somewhere that the NBA, I guess they have a little more money. They plunk down for the really nice one, and the
MLS gets the two stars one.
Well, no, I'm sure it's still a very nice hotel, but they got their second choice. But whatever. Could you do some crossover stuff?
Oh my God.
Between the two?
That would be amazing. So, you know, in France, we've got a charity game every year with some 1998 World Cup winners and former rugby players for the national team, and they play one half of football. So rugby players included, right, against, and then the second half is rugby. So you have Zidane playing the first half football with rugby players, Chabal and stuff. Then the second half, Zidane has a rugby ball and he's playing rugby with the rugby boys. And I think it's great. And we could have one half of soccer, one half of basketball. Kevin Durant, he's still injured, but
Zidane's a big dude, but I mean, I would assume somebody like Chaval would go and like,
I know, but it's like church rugby. Come on, it's not like
it's not like Zidane goes, no, because he could turn your buddy Lizarazu into a little puddle of oil. How bad do the rugby guys, do they have like big fat props and stuff? Also, because these guys are retired, right?
Yeah. So I mean, it's good fun. It's for charity. 300-pound props. Don't expect it to be like, you know.
No, but like, what I wonder about, like, does Thierry Henry like take the ball and like try and go and like show off
like John Alomu type of style? Exactly.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Talking about World Cup winners, Gab, another one from another team, another era. N'Golo Kanté is back in full contact training for Chelsea. How important is this?
Well, I think on the pitch, it's hugely important. I think while Chelsea have a bunch of options in central midfield, I think Kanté gives you something that others don't provide, and I think that's critical to the way Lampard plays. Obviously, the reason he sat out is that he's got a congenital respiratory condition.
Yeah.
He waited to get doctor's advice. When it gets into doctors and medicine, you know, I have no idea. In fact, many times they have no idea. They just play percentages.
Yeah.
What's most important is that Kanté feels safe out there. Never going to be 100% safe from anything, but he has to feel like he's in the right mindset. And I think Chelsea were good to give him as much time as he needed.
They were very good, and I'm glad to see him back, and hopefully he can be fit and ready for the restart of the season.
Now, we touched upon it with Sid, but Juanma Leo is going to be Pep's number two. Jules, are you surprised he didn't opt for a youngster to groom rather than a hipster favorite who used to be his boss?
Maybe, and we talked before on the show, I think maybe a couple of weeks ago, something that Vincent Kompany maybe turned down the opportunity of coming back as the number two. I found this fascinating because you know how Pep works, and Pep really has to trust the people that he works with, and the people in that staff, they're almost like brothers, or in this case, probably father to him. And Leo has said, like, he's like my son kind of thing. And maybe that's what he needed. Maybe
somebody to challenge him.
Yeah. And someone whose voice would be, you know, I think Mikel Arteta, or his voice was heard. But I think with Leo, it's even more like, okay, what should I do kind of thing? You know, what should we do? What would you do in this position? And I think it'd be very interesting. We mentioned before how important number twos are sometimes, but maybe not as important as you would think they are. Let's see what the dynamic is there, because maybe they would not agree on certain things. And maybe Lilo would still have a mind of a number one kind of manager, not a number two.
Could that work? I take as read that Leo will challenge Pep when he sees things differently, and that Pep obviously wants to be challenged. I think it's always a risk for certain types of managers that their entire staff turns into yes men, because
and
it's not in a bad way, but you need to have everybody pulling in the same direction. You need to have, you know, one voice. But I find this really, really interesting.
It's interesting.
And we'll see how it plays
out. Obviously Lillo has no experience of the Premier League. I assumed he would have watched games on television, and especially probably even more now. But do you see what I mean? Usually you still get a guy who's played there, or knows about it, or knows the players, or knows, but that's not the case at all. The guy is completely a stranger when it comes to English football. In Portugal, Porto beat Maritimo last night 1-0, and Benfica were held by Portimonense 2-2, despite being two goals up. Anything we can read into this, Gab? I mean, it keeps changing. So Porto
I think
stopped,
the one thing
Benfica
that we can read into it is that, at least in Portugal, you know, the whatever advantage the big clubs had, because let's face it, Porto and Benfica, you know, budget-wise are so far ahead of everybody else, isn't something to be taken for granted. And I wonder, I mean, in the Bundesliga, we didn't see this so much, but I wonder if this is a sign of things to come, perhaps in Spain or Italy, where, you know, maybe the climate is going to be more similar to Portugal, maybe in the Premier League too, where maybe, you know, the so-called lesser teams aren't going to be, you know, road graded
Can you imagine?
By the big guns.
If Liverpool start losing first two games, like, what? What's going on?
Jules, I need you to tell us about this unusual story about, I mean, this story hits everything.
It's just like
Neymar, his mom, her 22-year-old boyfriend, Neymar's personal chef.
Homophobia.
Twitch. Can you sum up for us?
So.
The police, somebody falling down the stairs.
Maybe? Yeah, I mean, I'm going to try to sum it up as best as I can, right?
And a male model?
Help me. Yeah, I mean, Neymar's mum and dad have separated a long time ago. Neymar's mum is around 50 or something like
she's
that.
She's 52.
52, yeah. Got a new boyfriend who's 22. That's okay. If she's happy, if they're happy, that's fine with us, you know. Turned out that his boyfriend is bisexual. Again, that's fine. If he's happy and everybody's happy, it's good with us. But turned out as well that he used to be in a relationship with Neymar's chef. Again, no problem with that. But it seems that Neymar is not so keen on it. And there was exchanges.
Well, this is also on the back of an incident of the boyfriend getting hurt.
Oh yes, sorry. Yes. So they were together before and they split up, and then apparently the boyfriend fell down the stairs and sort of went through a window and had to have stitches on his arm through the injury, but all by accident.
Yeah.
Again.
Surely.
Sure, I mean accident.
Nothing untoward there.
Then they got back together, and now there's been a exchanges of words on Twitch, the platform Twitch, where apparently Neymar or someone who was writing with these accounts made homophobic slurs towards the boyfriend, which led to, you know, someone like...
He's facing accusations.
Yeah, accusation and investigation from the police and stuff like that. And he's just like, come on. I mean, I think lockdown is taking its toll on a lot of people now and a lot of situations. And he's just like, it's Neymar again. His name dragged into controversy.
I got to say this about Neymar. I mean, first of all, like, you know, some people would have been... When your mom starts dating somebody who is 6 years younger than you and 30 years younger. I mean, we see it with men, right? There's a little
sexism of course.
There, right?
No, like, yeah.
People take on, you know, second wives who are 30 years younger. But we don't see it so much the other way around. Neymar on social media anyway, he was very supportive of this. I think like most people, Neymar just cares for his mom and wants to look out for his mom. They have a very close relationship. I do think Neymar needs to remember that he is a public figure, and he's obviously surrounded by people, because I think what he said on Twitch was a private conversation, private room with somebody.
We're not sure if it's him directly.
Or
though,
what was said on Twitch using his account.
Yeah, yeah.
So, again, limit who uses your account and pay attention to the people around you, because clearly there are people who are, as we saw with other incidents with Neymar, who are very quick to take what you think is a private conversation and leak it to... You know, leak it in public to the media. I just think, obviously, from a football perspective, Neymar needs this like he needs a whole
big time. Yeah, he's going to come back to Paris soon, resume training on June the 22nd, and hopefully all that would go away. Well, finally, Gab, I'm glad you put that question at the end of the quickies. I was not sure if you would or not, but you were very confident going into our game in the Battle of the Leagues. It was Ligue 1 against Bundesliga yesterday. But you needed a late, really late equalizer from your boy Kai Havertz to just get a point against me and my team.
All right. So for those who haven't seen this, and it's up on the website, so you can go and see the highlights. I went out there. I didn't make too many changes. I made some changes from the first game where I was very disappointed to be held by Brazil to a draw. And I thought we had the upper hand for most of the game. However, Cesc Fabregas running at 2 miles an hour down our left flank, Kimmich nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, because my tactics worked so well.
Your tactics. And then passes it to Aouar. We find ourselves a goal down. And then try to unleash the might of the Bundesliga. I have to say Sancho and Werner have been a little bit disappointing so far. But then Kai Havertz coming up big with the equalizer. Great goal celebration as well.
Yeah, on his head, yeah.
It's weird. We're all on one point here. And I play La Liga in the third one.
Are you stressed?
It's La Liga. It's messy. Now, Sidlo's been pretty bad at this so far.
Yeah, he's been bad.
I think La Liga are big underachievers. But, I think I might go all out, play a super attacking game.
Would you now?
Have you seen Ramos and Pique try to defend?
True, that's true. That's very true. That's very true. We should have won against them in the first game. And then we play Brazil in the last game, knowing that a win and we will go through whether it's first or second.
And how bad has Augie been? I mean, all right, the Premier League will get through.
Yeah.
But disappointing display so far against both MLS
It's either you know your football tactics or you don't. You know, you can't just become a manager like this, and Augie clearly has issues.
I think
tactics.
The boy's out of his depth.
Yeah, clearly. Definitely. He's going to be sacked soon anyway.
All right, Jules, let's wrap this with the Alphabet 11. The X team. We know it's going to be hard. I apologize in advance for any mispronunciations because I have a lot of troubles with teams starting with the letter X. But yes, these are our X-Men and X-Ladies soon.
Yeah, exactly. And thank you again to the people who played, who sent their teams. It was very hard. Some just gave up and said, I've got Chaka and that's it. You know, we got quite a lot of them. Yeah, the two Chaka brothers and stuff. Sadio's hairline sent us his team, which I thought was pretty good. Gzo Black in goal, Alexander Arnold, etc., etc. Well done. So let me give you Alim's team, who has a CSL All-Star Chinese Nationals as well, starting with the letter X in a 4-3-3. Xiaong Feng Gang in goal, Zhang Ji at the back with Jiao Ting Feng, Xuan Cao and Zhuang Ping Li, Xi Wu, Xuri Zhao and Xize Zhang in midfield, and Xiang Gao, Xu Shengdong and Xingen Wu, sorry for my pronunciation, at the top. So you have all Chinese 11 if you wanted to. Joao Miguel Jorge has his 11. He's got Chavito from Ferroviario in goal, Chisco Campos from Mallorca at the back, Chandao from Brazil, and Xavi at the back as well, so back three.
Is that Xavi Quintilla?
Yeah, so does that count? I thought... Because you also put Xavi Simons, the youngsters from PSG, in there. Who is Xavi, to be fair, but... Well, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Chadas from Maritimo in midfield with Granit Xhaka, Cheka from Lille, so Xavi from PSG, and Xavier from Tondela. And up front, he's got Chande, who's at West Ham. And then from Mazda FC, Chichanok Xaisensuritone or something like that. You know, who plays in Malaysia or Indonesia or somewhere. So, well done, Joao. So maybe let's go into women's
ladies.
Team.
Yeah. All right. Well, Sophie Lawson, again, not disappointing. She's got Zhu Huan in goal, Zhu Jianlu, Zhui Zhao, and Zhang Meili, and Maria Santi at the back. Oh, no, it's back five. Maria Santi and Zhao Yuyi at the back. In midfield, Yvonne Zhaoui. Zhu Zhan and Emma Jouereb, no relation to the former French international Danielle.
I don't think so, but
I think she's Maltese. And Jie Kiwin and Georgia Xenofontos up front, or Xenofontos, or what? Sorry. I need to educate myself.
So Miguel Galán obviously sent his as well. There's a few names that are in Sophie's team as well. He's got Wang Zhu in goal. Gzuliak Zindole from Albania, double X, he says. Well done. Zixian Gzu from China and Jiao Gzu as well in the back three. Claudette Gzuereb, who is Emma Gzuereb's sister. So he's got both Gzuereb sisters in his team.
So if you only needed one Zuereb.
Yeah, it was, you know, to be fair. Gzilda Gzimerti from Albania, double X as well, like Sophie's. Kiwen Gzi, Yuyi Xiao, and Riola Gzemaili from Switzerland in the midfield five, and then the front two of Jan-Luc Zhou and Emma Zuereb from Malta. So again, incredible from Miguel and Sophie on their women's 11.
I think if you're a fan of Chinese Super League and Albanian football, you definitely
this is your game.
On this
yeah,
one.
This is your game. Big time. You're the winner. You're the winner. Right, Gab, what about yours? I'm curious to hear at your ex team.
I don't know. So my goalkeeper is Zinopoulos, who's from Panathinaikos, so yeah. He's a backup keeper.
Yeah.
At the back, I have Samuel Xavier from Sahara. Siana Xulu, who plays in South Africa for Maritzburg United.
Come on, you went to get that one. You went deep. You went deep to get him.
Dude, he's played for bigger teams too.
Okay.
I forget now, but
yeah.
And of course, Jean Dal from CRB, Clube Regatas do Brasil, in midfield. I have Zhu Kin, who used to be at Atletico Madrid B. He's now at Guangzhou. I have Talent Xhaka. I took up my full Xhaka allocation because, of course, I also have Granit Xhaka in there. I have Xhaka from Lille and Zhu Tianran from Hebei. And then up front, I have Xavi Puerto from Mulhouse. And I appreciate that could be more. Why, do you call him Puerto?
I don't know. You've been really strict with the rules so far. Because it's the X team we give you.
But I should get double points for the other one because nobody's mentioned him yet. Cisco, former Newcastle legend Cisco, who now plays for Peñarol.
Exactly. I've got him. So I went for Xenopoulos in goal as well.
By the way, sorry, before we go on, none of us have Abel Xavier. I am sure that guy hasn't retired.
He's
got to be playing somewhere in his mid-50s.
He's a hairdresser now somewhere.
No, man. I don't think...
We can't have it. Producer Freddie said we can't have him.
Abel Xavier, he's like Highlander. Honestly.
The guy never stopped playing. Okay, so my team, Gab, I've got Xenopoulos in goal as well from Panathinaikos. I've tried not to have any Chinese players, as in like, you know, Chinese nationals, but I've got players who played in China, like Heidi Xisi, who plays for Shanghai Shenhua. I've got Gemayli from Neuchâtel at the back as well, with Tolon Xhaka, the brother. My midfield is Bruno Gjadas from Maritimo, Granit Xhaka, Cheka from Lille, Gabriel Javier from Nagoya, and Javier from Tondela. And then my front two is Bruno Xavier from Aves, and Chisco from Peñarol, as you said, former Newcastle legend.
So we get a bit of a reprieve next week with a Y team, which is going to feel like an absolute...
Yeah, yeah, and
I got my Yarmolenkos ready. And then... And then
Zinedine Zidane's team.
There
to
you
finish
go.
It off, man. This is pretty cool. Just before the whole of the football world comes back, this is fitted.
Perfect timing. Well done. And speaking of timing, our time is up. So let's do this again on Monday with La Liga back, baby.
Oh, Viva La Liga!